Welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. Last week on the programme, we heard from John Doyle about how stepping into a classroom compares to stepping into a boxing ring. The preparation is what you do in the gym beforehand. The gym prepares you for teaching, and your gym consists of what you learn from colleagues, from college, from reading, from reflecting on teaching, and from life. Today, John Doyle illustrates the idea of the gym by examining what lay behind his own teaching of the Irish language. For teachers in primary schools in Ireland, the teaching of Irish cannot be avoided, and every teacher has a relationship to the language. Think for a moment about how you learned Irish. How well do you speak it? Rate your enthusiasm for it on a scale of 1 to 10. Should it be compulsory for children? Are you teaching it for cultural reasons, for communicating, or for both? How do you envisage the status of Irish in Ireland in 10, 20, or 30 years' time? What is the attitude of children in your class to Irish? And do you speak Irish to your teaching colleagues? Teachers rarely discuss such matters openly, yet they inform how we teach the language. Today's programme is based on one teacher's essay on what informs his teaching of Irish. And John begins with a brief introduction to the essay.
Irish. It is possible to be very positive about Irish, and everything you say about it is positive. After all, nothing else will be helpful. But I say, when your life meets the gym, this is a moment of deep honesty. It means, ultimately, you can bring yourself into teaching Irish. It's not just teacher conveyed, it's personally communicated. It's where the current of my life meets the current of the gym. And ultimately, maybe something touches the classroom, the actual ring. And what I'd like to do is to read this. Now, I didn't write this in one night. I mulled over things for a while. This is actually drawing from my life with all its enthusiasms and resistances and blind spots. I would say every teacher has a feel for Irish, but each one has a different feel, and usually that's never communicated. But nevertheless, the teacher is coming from somewhere. In a way, what I'm doing in this writing is listening to the voices of my own childhood, maybe my own rebellions, my own disdain, my own enthusiasms, so on. This really is an exercise in feeling rather than evidence. So what is this? This is tracing the lineaments, almost like the lifelines on the palm of my hand. They come out slowly. They are the record of my engagement with Irish, or the record of maybe my endurance of Irish, or maybe both together. So I'm reading it starting now. Irish, mixed feelings. Think of this poem by Yeats, The Song of Wandering Angus. Imagine, Angus is looking for his heart. Angus is looking for his soul. Angus is looking for his language. Angus is looking for Irish. We are still looking. I went out to the hazel wood because a fire was in my head, and cut and peeled a hazel wand, and hooked a berry to a thread. And when white moths were on the wing, and moth-like stars were flickering out, I dropped the berry in a stream, and caught a little silver trout. When I'd laid it on the floor, I went to blow the fire aflame, but something rustled on the floor, and someone called me by my name. It had become a glimmering girl with apple blossoms in her hair, who called me by my name and ran and faded through the brightening air. Though I am old with wandering through hollow lands and hilly lands, I will find out where she has gone, and kiss her lips and take her hands, and walk among long dappled grass, and pluck, till time and times are done, the silver apples of the moon, the golden apples of the sun. Is this the fate of Irish? An unappeasable longing? As Adam once named the animals, So, Irish once named everything. That's what a language is, the power to name and the power to make names stick. Irish was subjected to a succession of alien powers. These powers named things differently, and they made their names stick. Irish somehow lost the initiative in naming things. Irish, the view from the country. The city, well, a booming, buzzing confusion, as William James might have said. Did Joyce conquer the city? He certainly showed how labyrinthine it was, through Bloom's meanderings. Joyce certainly showed that only a language of many registers could name a city truly. Irish was poor in naming and poor in diversifying registers. Irish speakers lived in the country. They did not rule except locally. They were ruled. Irish was a language of survival and fantasy. Some would call it folk escapism. Irish had no plan B, yet it withstood the onslaught of English for centuries. People were sheltered in poverty and ignorance. Irish did not go head to head with English. English only attacked all forms of rulership and ownership, and that was enough. English named everything, even the people who spoke Irish. Think of Brian Friel's play Translations, methodically subjecting Ireland to a grid. Brian Friel's play was about at least two incursions into our very hearts and souls. One was the Ordnance Survey, a systematic survey of all the land of Ireland. In this survey, all properties would have their boundaries traced in case of dispute. All the old local names in Irish would be translated into names for the English ear. Sometimes the Irish would almost shine through. Take Ballybeg, Ballybeug, little town. Ballybeug became a singular name, a proper name, Ballybeg. They took the words out of our mouths and gave them back to us as theirs. But the English did not content themselves with appropriating our homeland piece by piece. They made us an offer we couldn't refuse. School. There would be parish national schools all across Ireland to offer primary education to all, except that the language of these schools would be wholly and only English. This opportunity created a crisis for Irish-speaking parents who often knew little English. Would speaking Irish to these pioneering children hold them back? Did the parents convert the schools to Irish? Or did the schools convert the parents to English? When children went to school, only English came back. Parents came under the yoke of English through their children. And while this experiment in putting a new heart and a new soul into Irish children and into their families, while this experiment was getting fully underway, something happened. Something awful. Something unthinkable. The potato failed, and failed again, and again, and again. Once was a disaster, twice was a catastrophe. More than that was the death of a people. The great famine, the great hunger, killed many, many too many, but it killed Irish too. Irish was the language of the poor, the potato eaters. Irish was an oral language. The Irish writers hugged the magical craft of writing to themselves. Reading and writing did not percolate up and down in the society. The penal laws through the long night of the 18th century destroyed writing. They destroyed hope. Hope dies last. The Irish poets expressed both lamentation and hope. So we were an oral people, an illiterate people, who depended utterly upon leaders. The English deprived our would-be leaders of education, so long as they remained Catholics. The arts of rulership remained impenetrable to the Irish poor. The new schools drove home English in all its world-mastering power, and it gave for the first time the secrets of reading and writing to the Irish poor. Of course, this was reading and writing in English. The afflicted spoke Irish, and Irish died with them. It was an awful death. Speech failed them. They became mute. Those who got out went to places where English was spoken, and they tried to fit in. The great hunger was also the great taboo. To dwell upon it was to be driven mad. It was put in brackets, but it was a great hiatus. Irish culture had had a slow and lonely death. Would English bring resurrection or vengeance? The Fenians were coming. Land wars, hunger wars, land hunger wars, the desperate search for roots. The Irish had spoken a language the alien did not know, and now the alien had exorcised it. Through school, they had stolen away the soul of the people, their language. The world of Irish had been a sacred or superstitious folk world, and now it was unable to articulate what had happened. Something had broken which could never be restored, the spirit of a people. This spirit haunts us still. After the famine, after the last generation of Irish speakers had died out, Irish revived, but it revived only within an ever more assertive nationalism. It even entered the schools. It even dominated the schools of the poor. It was taught relentlessly by nuns and brothers. Private schools often kept it at bay, just as they kept nationalism at bay. But Irish began its long march through the schools. People quietly sabotaged the unrelenting coercion which went with it. They offered passive resistance to the Gaelgori while parading their cúpla focal. Irish never became a folk language or even a dialect of ordinary life. There are dialects of German or Italian which live on still in ordinary life. They are spoken among friends and neighbours. They are local and oral and rooted. They do not compete with the dominant language in which there is writing and literature. The dominant language is taught at school and through all the media of the public sphere. The dialect is spoken at home or on social occasions in social settings. There is no competition. The dominant language is penetrating, but not all penetrating. There are many niches where particular dialects are quietly treasured and shared. Irish came back, but not as a dialect. Irish came back as a rival. Irish asserted itself and tried to bully the dominant language, and it failed. Irish as an imposition has left a bitter aftertaste in the hearts of many. Passive resistance continues. Irish is somehow not ours. It's part of what we are. Some say it is our soul, our ownmost identity. Some say all languages are equal in quality. They can all do the same thing, enable communication. Irish is a language and asserts itself as such. Who is it fooling? Are we once again trying to punch above our weight? From the Western Islands to the Berlaymont in Brussels, Irish has come far. The main activity of Irish today is translation. Translation of legal documents. This is a language which would indeed be strange, even alien, to those who once spoke Irish. Irish was a rural language, a language of the countryside. Urbanization, with its systems nested within systems, with its complexities nested within complexities, with its procedures nested within procedures. All this was foreign to the Irish. For in the city, they could not hear birds sing. Neither could they hear the cattle a-lowing. For them, the city truly was a booming, buzzing confusion. Yes, we have cities now, but we have inherited them from the English. in English. When people speak Irish in the city, do they speak as others speak dialects abroad? Ordinary life, the arts of conviviality. The urban order remains English. The urban order has gone global. Globalization equals urbanization, the methodical subordination of everything to money. Irish is not the language of commerce, the language of trading and investment. Irish is emphatically not the language of information. Irish is a bubble which information and legal code can only burst. There is still some Irish in poorer areas. What is a Gaeltacht but a poor area? Often by the sea or on islands nearby. So poor that the English didn't even bother to overwhelm it. Life in these areas was a hard scrabble to make a living exposed to the chanciness of things. Tourism has brought some relief and more English. Spoken Irish is subsidized, and indeed it is spoken. It is a spoken language, but is it any longer a native language? Television is omnipresent. English is omnipresent. The last native Irish speakers have probably all died out. We speak of bilingualism. The Irish are not bilingual. They speak and think and dream in English, only reminded that it is English by the medley of foreign languages, languages which are spoken here and now throughout the land. These foreign languages are often fed by home roots. For example, Polish is fed in constant coming and going home. There are tight communities of fellow speakers in all the main cities and towns. They speak Polish among themselves as a language, not as a dialect. Polish can make sense of the world in all its nooks and crannies, and the city is not foreign to it. There are so many books in Polish newly translated from the English. Translation feeds fantasy and dreaming and keeps us up to date. All American or English best-selling thrillers find their way quickly into Polish. There is so little translated into Irish. Even people from the Gaeltacht read best-selling thrillers in English. People today love to read newly translated thrillers in their own language. But once people loved to read the Bible in their own language, and that's how English became a literate language. There was a treasure which people wanted to enjoy, the King James Bible, a portal to many books, eventually to the novel. The novel was written by and for such readers. The English novel charts the maturing of the English mind. Where was the novel in Irish? Where was the treasure, the Bible, translated into Irish by scholars of Trinity College, was rejected. People were warned off it by the Catholic clergy. It was a Protestant Bible, yet it could have been the treasure. Irish was an oral language, an aural language, but literacy was so grudgingly shared that there was nobody to write for and nobody to write, especially after the famine. Irish as an oral language became a ghost language. Because it had not nourished literacy, nothing at all remained. What did the afflicted of the famine think of it all? What did they feel? Think of Thucydides. He took something local and made it something for everyone, everywhere. It even makes us cry, even in translation. But where is the Irish story of the famine? Who could have written it? First, we had to learn to read and write in English, and then, only then, go back and try our hand at Irish. I think of Dúil, a great book, a book worth learning Irish for. Is Irish anti-intellectual? Is it afraid of the life of the mind? A great writer always has many forebearers. A great Irish writer always has many forebearers, except that they did not write. Oral languages, unless spoken by many, many people, are vulnerable. Our constitution gives Irish a special place as our official language. This fantasy is exploited daily to make Irish visible. Visible does not mean red. Irish is mobilized in a long war, in a long march through the institutions, even in Europe. Others look at us, bewildered, interpreters and translators, and no audience. Multiculturalism. Many languages exist today, only insofar as they are subsidized. People are subsidized to speak. People are subsidized to write. People are subsidized to read. But some languages die out. But maybe there is resurrection after all. Think of Hebrew. Why wasn't it Yiddish which captured Israel? Why wasn't it Irish which captured our new state? Our new state was urban and largely British in institution, but Irish did not do institution. Could there have been a resurrection of Irish from the dead, as there had been, say, of Hebrew? Ireland began with a vicious civil war, which left us bitterly divided and dispirited. It was then that Irish was imposed on the youngest schoolchildren, often by teachers who themselves had never acquired a bloss, a charming fluency. There were translations of English novels. There was a whole department of translation. Were there many readers? How much was compulsion? How much was taste? Irish was for most a spectral language. School made it a great task, a never-ending task, not a great love. Learning Irish was a way of perpetual correction. Irish was the law of Loiter, like an arm of the GAA, enforced more than taught. If Irish was an oral language, how is it that whenever we opened our mouths to speak, we were forcibly corrected? There seemed only myriad ways to fail, and so few ways to succeed. Success brought relief. It did not bring love. Whole generations were marked by their experience of Irish in school. Some mastered it enough to make their way into the civil service or into primary teaching. Others suffered it without ever letting themselves feel for it. After school, there was a great silence. Irish would never be heard again. And yet, some hearts were open. Some were pushed, some were pulled, some felt an increasing power of attraction, something drawing one on and drawing one in. Our teachers did not dramatize the quest. Our teachers were enforcers, not heroes, foot soldiers, not officers. Theirs was a mute vision. If only they had tried to articulate it and share it with us, articulated like this, for example. The search for Irish is an heroic quest where we are all heroes together. Meanwhile, there was some delight to be found in some well-thumbed books. Scéal Shéanna, a folk version of Faust. Jimin Mora Haig, a folk version of Just William. Undo Cronach, a love triangle set amid the struggles for Irish freedom. This last was read aloud to us late in primary school, and we loved it. There was nothing folksy about it. Who would live and who would die, and would love be blighted? This was the first and perhaps the most affecting love story we had ever heard. Suddenly, Irish concealed great secrets of the heart. Suddenly, Irish could nourish a secret life. Suddenly, Irish was not about linguistic tics, but about longing. Of course, we could not articulate all that then, or perhaps even any of it, but we knew that Irish could be different, that it could nourish suspense. It could make us care about characters whose fate was still unknown. And all this because a young Christian brother shared with us what engrossed him. Brother Coffey had single-handed or single-hearted opened out Irish for a while. Secondary school Irish is a blur. Nothing really took root. Nothing was for its own sake. Maths in Irish? Well, you don't really want to know. We may admire the Christian Brothers for extending the reach of Irish into maths, but their spirit of exploration did not awaken such a spirit in others. There is one great poet, Martino de Roine. There is an elegiac tonality in so many of his poems. He knows he is the last of his kind. The backward look, no future there, but nevertheless, much feeling. Irish perhaps could have been revived as a dialect of conviviality, but it tried to be another language, a rival to English. English is not English. English is a world language, Irish is not. O'Dearóin did not overreach, but exercised restraint. He made a world memorable, a world that was still unexposed to modern media. Now anyone can be connected to anybody. Now anyone can be connected to anything, anywhere. Irish is thin and undernourished. It's on a drip. It lives only as heritage, as an assertion of identity. But identity as what? Have I ever found a home for the heart in Irish? Yes, yes I have, but far, far away from the city. Think of a skylark riding thermals up and up and showering twinkling notes. Irish, for me, is the language of skylarks, and I am a skylark. Some lines or phrases suddenly form a sweet and hidden music, and I write them down and keep them close to my heart. They are lines from Tiernan Og. Tá Tiernan Og imbal an domhain. Tá isagam bhí mé ann. Dorachadas dús. Dorachadas ag deara. Dorachadas mór hiompal orm. Dorachadas bachara. There is a hidden nectar in Irish which nourishes the heart. Perhaps it is only this nectar I seek everywhere. I find it everywhere, and I find it too in Irish. But perhaps only in Irish can I give it utterance. Everywhere else, there is the rumble and the smog of the city. There are other voices in Irish besides the voice of the skylark. But there's only one voice which speaks to me, one voice which speaks within me. Ian ex snov sanir, misha ex snov in einoklesh, huas, suspeir, ansho, anish, feak a temple, sho, nav, nilain, navella, shkrad nanin, amwe eran muir, imask nanilon, son irher here, eisht, leshan kunus, moor. Temple on Dowin Glair, Aisht, Leshon Cunus Moor, Evad Uin, Suspair, Fiak Erenainin, Inahi Erangrown, Tashi Kana, or Tatuau, Uskul the Hula, Uskul the Cree, Taon Green, Etanif, Erdosli, Kade on Kyol Shin, Echokt on Spare, Kade on Kyol Shin, Eglina on Air, Kade on Kyol Shin, Ni Gear na Garav, Kyol Nabaha, Kyol Namarav, Shantyangam of Winter. Tatu fos bio, vitu ek for arm, lashtir den kyo, time unwaked it, shan tianga mukre, hoktu blas dum, donabaha shiri.
That essay about teaching Irish by retired teacher and philosopher John Doyle was abridged from the original longer version in order to fit on today's programme. Remember, you can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on seandelaney.com or on iTunes. My own book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, which is published by Routledge, is now available online from the Routledge website or from any online bookseller. You can email me at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Until we speak again, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.